This is the Hockey News Podcast.
Hello, everybody. It's the Hockey News Podcast. I'm writer-editor Matt Larkin. We're here with associate senior writer Ryan Kennedy and senior writer Ken Campbell. I'm wondering at this point, do we need these introductions anymore? I feel like if you're listening, maybe you know us by now. I don't know. I'm thinking about it. Maybe next time we'll just jump right into it.
No, I don't know.
What do you guys think?
I like the format.
You like the introductions? Yeah, they just feel cheesy.
Because you ever see those shows like it's the man who needs no introduction and then they go and introduce him anyway.
Yeah.
Right? So anywho. Yeah, all right. I think we're at best B-list celebrities.
Yeah, it's being generous.
Yeah, like we're on the B-list at best.
Hockey celebrities.
At best.
Not all celebrities.
Yeah, not all celebrities.
In the grand scheme of life, we're like X-list. No, not X. That sounds dirty. Maybe Y-list. Y-list celebrities.
Yeah, maybe.
It's funny. Every time it seems like we're looking at the hockey news cycle, there's something bad about the St. Louis Blues these days, whether it's firing Ken Hitchcock. Now it's Robbie Fabry's gone for the year with a torn ACL. Jake Allen getting sent home for a timeout. But Fabry's
for a timeout.
That's what it was. But the latest malady is indeed Robbie Fabry gone for the year, torn ACL. We know the Blues are on the bubble right now in the Western Conference playoff picture. Do you think this is sort of the end? Is this the beginning of the end for them? Can they get back in the playoffs? Or should they start thinking seriously about being a seller team?
Well, you know, I think... If you ask about them being a seller, I think... I'm just going to open my Diet Coke here.
Yes, here we go. I'm going to put the microphone right beside it. Yeah, come on. Get a sponsorship. Come on, Diet Coke.
Nectar of the gods, baby! Anywho, I think if you're talking about them being a seller, I think you got to deal in reality here. You know, Doug Armstrong just fired his coach. They're 2 points out... Wow, it's bubbling over.
Oh, man.
They're two points out of the final playoff spot in the Western Conference. I don't think that Doug Armstrong has any appetite to start ditching guys and rebuilding so that somebody else can reap the rewards of that. I mean, he's in a bit of survival mode right now, so I don't think it's really realistic to expect that he's going to start, you know, dumping some of these guys in favor of picks or young players. And it was interesting last week during his press conference after Hitch was fired. It was kind of an under-the-radar sort of comment, but it really stuck with me. He basically said, if our goaltending doesn't get any better, nothing changes. And he's right. I mean, he's right. Unless part of this overhaul includes going out and getting an established number one guy, I don't think that that's something that he's going to do.
Yeah. For me, I wonder if at this point in time, the right trajectory would be to have a sit down with Mike Yeo and say, what kind of team do you want from here on out? And so you're not a buyer, you're not a seller, but you will be making moves. I thought coming into this season, we were seeing a faster, more streamlined Blues team being put together. David Backes gone, Robbie Fabry,
Troy Brower gone.
You know, maybe have an elevated role for Robbie Fabry with those guys gone from the top six, top nine. But this year, I wouldn't necessarily say the Blues are Pittsburgh 2, you know.
Yeah.
But are they going to be that old burly Blues team? Are they going to be a new incarnation under Yeo? I think they need to establish that now and get a head start because, I mean, they still have a lot of good pieces. And you're right. I mean, with a competent... confident goalie, it's a whole different ball game. And there are going to be some very good netminders available either at the trade deadline or at the draft. So you don't have to start from scratch, far from it. But I think they need to get on the same page and say, what do we want to be moving forward?
If I'm Doug Armstrong, I think about hedging my bets because to me the exception is Kevin Shattenkirk. He's UFA. He's going to get 7 years, $7 million. If he's staying with the Blues, 8 years at $7 million a year, I think. Right shot, still in his prime, mid to late 20s. And if you look at St. Louis's cap situation, Colton Parayko is going to be an RFA. And next year, Robbie Fabry, health permitting, will be an attractive RFA to sign to a long-term deal as well. I just don't see how it's going to fit. Joel Edmondson got extended. Pietrangelo's there long-term. Bomeister has many years left as well. Yeah. So Shattenkirk cap-wise is not going to fit. I don't think no matter what they do, I think he's a goner no matter what.
Yeah.
So if you're Doug Armstrong, to me, I agree, Ken, what you're saying. He's got to save his job. But if he doesn't trade Shattenkirk and the Blues miss the playoffs, it's over. He's
yeah,
done.
See, I was taking Shattenkirk out of that equation. Like, if he can't fit into the salary cap, there's no you know future for him there. And really, I mean, you know, what are they going to do in the playoffs this year? If they get in, you know, do they really have the chops to hang with a lot of the good teams? Probably not. So yeah, I mean, Shattenkirk would be a guy that you would want to maximize, you know, the return on him for sure, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. The other name I thought about is Patrick Berglund. He's the other UFA of note, and he did get really hot recently, goal scoring binge. But he's a guy to me. He's never quite realized his potential. But if you take a Patrick Berglund and drop him on a contending team, and he's their third line center, that's a good third line center, I think.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, great size and a little bit of skill. On the flip side of the coin, another team that I've been wondering about, I think some readers have been wondering about what they should do, the Edmonton Oilers. They're a team that, you know, it's been years since they've been a legit playoff contender. Suddenly they've made a huge leap forward this year. The question is now the time to strike? Should they be behaving as a buyer team, or are they sort of like the Leafs, more of a stand pat situation right now?
I think they have to be a buyer. I think they, you know, this is a team that owes it to its fans to do everything it can to make itself the best team it can be. And, I mean, I don't think they're in the same, they're a little bit ahead of the Leafs
mm-hmm.
template when it comes to building and everything. You know, they're already there. They've got their young guys in place. And I think they have, they, you know, if there's a move out there that they can make and it's a rental, like, a Kevin Shattenkirk, which
that's
is
what they
a perfect
need.
Example, and that's what they need, then I think they have to do everything in their power to go for it. I mean, this is a team that, you know, I mean, they've hoarded their draft picks. They've drafted the young guys. They've put their fans through hell over the last decade. And I think this is a team that absolutely owes it to his fans to go out and get a rental. And, I mean, I look at their center ice, you know, McDavid, the Nuge, Caligula.
I always want to say
Caligula. Yeah. And Letestu. So that's a team that I'm not sure has the chops down the middle to compete in the Western Conference. I'd be looking at, why not look at a Matt Duchene? Why
mm-hmm.
not look at someone, you know, down the middle that can be a key piece for you?
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
I could see if you're going rental, like a Martin Hansel would work out pretty well
Ooh,
for
yeah.
you.
That was exactly the guy.
Yeah.
I actually wrote his name down. I have his name written down right here. Yeah,
yeah,
Martin Hansel, a great big guy who could play the third line,
mm-hmm.
be that Michael Hanzus type of guy that was, you know, that the Blackhawks had a couple of years ago. Yeah, you're absolutely right, Ryan.
Yeah.
That's a perfect example.
And, you know, in a perfect world, and somebody actually asked you and I this on Twitter today, Matt, you know, should the Oilers, or they were asking, yeah, if Chiarelli could get Shattenkirk on a sign and trade. And I think that would be the best case scenario for the Oilers, because for me this year, we know Edmonton's going to make the playoffs, but this feels like the year that they get punched in the nose
yeah.
in the first round by, say, Anaheim or San Jose, and they pick themselves up and say, okay, well, that's the playoffs. We know for next time. Good experience.
Yeah.
So if they get Shattenkirk, it can't just be for those 2 months. Or
right.
whatever it is. I would like them to, you know, because if you have Shattenkirk next year, then all of a sudden the defense core has a bit more time to gel. Like, you're a bit deeper with Shattenkirk. McDavid's a year more experienced. You know, maybe Puljujarvi is up there, even if he's a bottom sixer. Your team is just that much stronger, and they know what to expect coming into the playoffs. And then you're really, you know, if Cam Talbot is your guy and is still playing the way he has been, then all of a sudden you're like, you know what? We're kind of in this right now.
Yeah.
We could make a pretty long run.
I like what you're saying. I'm not sure that, you know, why would Kevin Shattenkirk do that? Why, like, he's come this far. You know, he could make himself open to every team in the league after... you know, if he goes to July 1st, but I do like that idea.
What if the sign and trade was the Blues sign Shattenkirk to an 8-year deal?
Right.
And trade him.
Right. Yeah.
And it's interesting because there was a lot of talk in the offseason that, oh, Shattenkirk's an East Coaster. He lives in the Hamptons. He doesn't want to go west.
Yeah.
But I know Jeremy Rutherford, who's a really good beat writer in St. Louis, he's our correspondent.
Yeah, he's one of the best.
He refuted that theory. Shattenkirk told him, no, that's overblown. And to me, there is that appeal of if you're going to Edmonton, especially if you're Kevin Shattenkirk, you know you're going to make Edmonton better just by you being there. You're going to Connor McDavid for his entire prime.
Yeah,
that's pretty.
Like,
that's pretty sexy.
How would you like seeing that guy wheeling out of your zone when you got the open lane?
Yeah, really.
Oh, here comes an assist.
Yeah,
here comes another one. Oh boy, I'm going to get like 87 assists this
year. That's right.
This
he might.
Great.
He might.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean,
to me, I mean, it would have to be a case of probably the classic Edmonton overpay. Just, you know, they always have to because they're the furthest geographically.
Yeah.
But if, you know, if they told Kevin Shattenkirk, okay, you don't get to open market, but we're going to give you 7.6. We're going to give you Ryan Suter's contract with fewer years, of course.
Mm.
But something like
that,
and he knows, okay, you know what, that's as good as I was going to get on the open market. Maybe they could tempt him. I don't know.
Yeah.
And you get to play with McDavid. I mean, that's the thing, too, right? It's like, Edmonton used to be a free agent wasteland, but we've already seen the McDavid effect with Milan Lucic.
Right.
That's right. I think he even said the McDavid effect or something.
Yeah.
Like word
for
word.
No, he made no secret of the fact that that was a huge reason why he signed in Edmonton.
Now he's playing with Martin Letestu, but whatever.
He still gets to see Connor McDavid
every day. Yeah.
And lunch. Another name being bandied about, of course, probably more than any other name, it's probably the top prize because he's still got term left on his deal, Matt Duchene in Colorado. Where do you think he's going to go, and do you think he's definitely going to go at the deadline?
I'm not convinced he's going at the deadline. In fact, I would say there's a better chance he goes at the draft than the deadline. I just find the deadline now is not the time to make those, you know, franchise-altering kinds of deals that will end up, you know, having ramifications for years down the road. I find that, you know, the draft seems to be the place for those deals more often than not because you've got everybody together. You know, you can walk over to, Peter Chiarelli's hotel or Mark Bergevin's hotel and start talking about what you're going to trade or whatever, right? And I just think that, unless it's a great deal for Colorado, I think they should hold off until after the trade deadline. But, you know, if I'm Montreal, like, again, there's another one.
Yeah.
If I'm Montreal, there's another one where, you know, you owe it because, like, you've already gone all in.
Yeah.
Right? Like, you know.
By getting Shea Weber.
By getting Shea Weber, you've said, we got to win the Stanley Cup within the next X number of years, right? You've said that.
Three.
Because in the back end of this contract, you're getting hosed.
Mm-hmm.
You're getting hosed, okay? So you got to win in the front end of this contract. So you've already gone all in. So you've got now. You need a centerman, and you need someone who has some pop to his game. And that guy is Matt Duchene.
Yeah.
And it would be crazy because then Mark Bergevin will have made even a bigger trade than the Jay Weber trade. But I think that Montreal would be a team that would go really really hard at a guy like that. And you know, then you're talking about the Sergachevs and the, you know, all these young guys that they have, you know, then those guys are on the move. And I think, you know, Montreal owes it to their roster, to their team, and to their fans to really make a run for that one.
Yeah, I would say I agree wholeheartedly. And, you know, the speed that Duchene brings to a Habs squad that is going to need those kind of guys if they are going to compete for a cup. In the next couple of years when they're going to have to go through a Pittsburgh or a Washington, you know, you're going to have to match that team speed. And you've got Galchenyuk, who I still think is the number one center there, and he's still getting into that role, but at least they're giving him the rope now. And you add Duchene to that top six.
With his injuries. Like, Galchenyuk seems to be a little...
But, you know, you can...
Gets banged up a lot.
You can only kind of, like, assume that a guy is going to get hurt. And as long as it's not a chronic situation, but I would agree with the draft. I mean, with Colorado, they know they're missing the playoffs. Things cannot get worse, so they might as well get full value for Duchene and or Landeskog. If it happens at the deadline, that's cool. Maybe they catch a team that's desperate and they get a little more than they could have. But if they don't like what's out there, no reason not to wait for the draft.
I know we didn't say we were going to talk about this, but we're talking about the road and the playoffs in the East. Like, does it feel different? Does Washington feel different this year to you? They do to me. They really do to me. Like, I mean, Jay Beagle and Daniel Winnicker on the fourth line. Jay Beagle has 10 goals.
The only reason
why I say it is because they're doing it, and Ovechkin's not the one scoring all the goals.
Mm-hmm.
you know? Yeah. And I don't know. I mean, at the All-Star game, there's a fellow by the name of Tarek Albasher who works for Comcast Washington. Great reporter, terrific guy, used to work for the Washington Post. And he said to me, and he's probably one of the guys that's seen these folds in the past and knows what this team has done in the playoffs, and he said, Kenny, you better be looking forward to coming to Washington in the spring. And that wasn't like homerism, that wasn't any of that. It was like, yeah, there's a different feel around this team this year. And it just, they're clinical. Like, they just dismantled LA yesterday. Mm-hmm. It was just a dismantling.
And they're getting shutouts from Philip Grubauer.
Yeah.
They're getting shutouts from their backup goalie.
Yeah, yeah.
And you're right. I mean, they just pick teams apart. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they're stacked. I mean, I want to say yes, but honestly, I said that last year. Like, they won the President's Trophy last year. I remember doing a story on Nicholas Backstrom, and he said, you know, this is the first year that we haven't said this is the year, and that's why I know this is the year. And then it wasn't.
Right,
even
yeah,
though they
yeah.
had, like, that many, they flirted with the wins record. Brayden Holtby tied the all-time wins record, right? So last year, to me, felt like this conversation could be, we could put it on Twitter. People might say, what year is that from? Is that from this year?
Yeah.
Is it from last year?
Yeah,
is it from 2010?
Yeah.
So it's hard to say.
A fourth line of Jay Beagle, Daniel Winnick, and Tom Wilson, though.
Oh, it's a great fourth
depth.
Line.
That's depth.
Yeah.
That's depth.
It's interesting. I still had some Matt Duchene.
I think that's the fourth line, right?
Why not?
Yeah.
It sounds about right.
Sure.
We can look it up.
Maybe they've worked up to the third line.
Yeah. You got Tom Wilson in the mix, too, trucking people left and right.
Yeah.
There was a point I wanted to make about Colorado. One of you guys mentioned waiting until the draft, but to me it's interesting because is it a similar Doug Armstrong situation for Joe Sakic? Do you think Joe Sakic is under the gun thinking, hey, if I don't do something to secure the team's future by the deadline, am I still going to be GM of the Avs by June?
From the folks I've been talking to that have the links in Denver, no. Joe Sakic has a lot of rope right now.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, you know, he can go to ownership and say, like, look, you know, things haven't turned out, but...
I'm Joe Sakic.
I've done a lot for you. Just give me a bit of time, and we're going to do this the right way. And I think that's the key thing, and that actually gives him more time. So he can say, like, look, I don't want to rush this. Obviously, we were horrid this year. We were bad last year as well. I'm going to rebuild the right way, and it'll require a bit more pain, but I want to make sure that we're set up for the long haul. And I think that will allow him to go into the deadline with a bit of a mandate to say, like, improve the team, but do it on your timetable, not on this sort of arbitrary seasonal deadline.
Right. I had a couple of sleeper teams in my head I wanted to throw out there for you as well, as suitors. Just based on the general manager's past behavior, one is the Nashville Predators.
Yep.
David Poile's as aggressive as anyone. He's always willing to trade first-rounders, prospects. I think Nashville's a team that could really use another good center. And even just culturally, it's a great fit for Matt Duchene. He's a country music guy. He loves music. I think he'd be right at home. He was super at home at the All-Star game last year. I think he would just be a really nice fit for the city.
Yeah, and David Poile, like you say, he's not afraid to make the big move, and he's not afraid to make the big splash. I mean, God, he just lost Derek Grant on waivers. Like,
he rolls the dice.
Sorry, Derek Grant.
No, but you're right. You're right. I think Nashville would be a good fit, and I think that would be a team that. I mean, it's always like they always seem to be looking for that guy. You know,
that's right.
And then even when they get them, they're still looking for that guy.
Yeah, it's true. The other team I'm thinking about is Chicago. Even though cap-wise, it doesn't seem like it would fit. But again, they're a team. They're willing to move mountains. You know, they moved Marco Dano last year, first-round pick, to get Andrew Ladd. They moved first-round pick the year before for Vermette. I could see Chicago saying, you know what? Screw it. We'll put Duchene on the left wing with Jonathan Toews. We'll find a way. Because they're always in win-now mode. It never ends for them.
Yeah.
So they figure, we'll mortgage.
As long as they have that core, they're going to be in the win-now mode.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it's weird. I've heard people say, how the Blackhawks have mismanaged the salary cap. Are you kidding me? They've managed the hell out of the
salary
cap.
They've owned the salary cap.
Yeah, the salary cap has been there, you know what?
They could write.
Oh, I can say it. It's podcast. It's
no, don't say it.
It's been there, bitch. I can say that because it's a podcast.
Yeah, that's right.
The salary cap is the bottom bunk in prison. when you win three Stanley Cups in this era.
Well, you know what?
You know
if anybody
what
can do it, it's Stan Bowman.
So does that make Marco Dano, is Marco Dano a pack of cigarettes?
in, or I don't know.
Maybe, yeah. Or like, you know, like hot chocolate or something. Like, you know,
hot
like
chocolate?
Like the powder, you know.
Did you say that?
Yeah.
I think we should go to some reader questions. What do you guys say? A couple of reader questions?
I think we should keep talking.
Keep it going. Keep going about the prison analogy. First one, Aaron Walker. At the Aaron Walker. Ooh, la-di-da,
not
Aaron.
To be confused.
He asks, how long do you think it'll take for Vegas to host either the All-Star Game or the draft?
Not long. Not long at all. I think Gary Bettman said as much at the All-Star weekend. He was asked about that, and he basically intimated that it would be somewhere in the next probably 3 years. And I think that, you know, not just sort of reading the tea leaves, I wouldn't be surprised if it happens next year if the NHL doesn't go to the Olympics, because right now the NHL doesn't have an All-Star game, right? Mm-hmm. And they can't plan an All-Star game, and they can't announce a place for an All-Star game because they don't know if there's going to be one, right? Mm-hmm. So, like, if there would be any sort of market that would be energized and everything and would be, you know, I mean, I'm sure the Golden Knights would say, yeah, bring it on, baby, we'll take it. You know, I mean, you've got the awards there already. You've got, it's a big event place. You know, they had like the world curling thing there last weekend.
Oh, really?
Because they had it on NBC while we were watching the All-Star game.
Oh, yeah.
Anyways, but in any event, they I think that if the NHL does not go to the Olympics next year, there's a fairly good to very good chance that LA gets the All-Star, or Las Vegas gets the All-Star game.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Next one, Bryce Edie at Brycey35 asks, what is Jonathan Drouin's ceiling? To me, it's a lot higher than Jonathan Drouin gets credit for. People are talking about this breakout this year. It's not a breakout. It's a breakout in ice time. That's it. If you looked at the analytics, the per-minute statistics, when John Cooper kept demoting him to the fourth line, per minute, Drouin was producing like an elite NHL scorer. Yeah. All he needed was the chance, and now he's proving it this year. Even though Tampa Bay, yikes, they're not looking good. But I think Drouin, I think he's going to settle into a nice range where when he peaks, I can see him being a 75-point player because he's got a lot of great offensive instincts.
Eh? Yeah.
Something like that, yeah.
How many goals? 30?
I think he's more of a 30-goal guy, but I think he's going to get a lot of assists. I don't have it in front of me, but
like,
yeah, something in that range. But, you know, a good, I wouldn't call him a goal-scoring winger. I'd call him a scoring winger. You know, good playmaker, good hands, good speed, kind of like Martin St-Louis. St-Louis could be the type of player he grows up to be.
All I need to know, I don't need to know any of that stuff that you just said. All I need to know is that I was talking to Scotty Bowman a while ago, and he was raving about him. He loves Jonathan Drouin. Mm-hmm. So if Scotty Bowman likes him and thinks he's a great passer and does all kinds of good things, that's good enough for me. Mm-hmm. He's going to be great.
Yeah, I think he's a top-line winger. I mean, he was drafted third overall for a reason. And it's funny because he was the type of player where you looked at his frame, he was pretty slight in junior. It was always going to take him a bit of time. So I think what we're seeing now is really just him arriving, and he's going to continue to build on that as he gets stronger, as he gets more experience, gets more responsibility in Tampa Bay. So I still think he's the top-line winger we always thought he would be.
And I think, too, the fact that he's gone through this rough patch already indicates that he's grown up. He's learned that it's a business. He's learned that it's, you know, sometimes an unforgiving business, and that you don't always get your own way when you stamp your feet. And I think that that's all, those things are going to build his character to the point where he, you know, where he doesn't have to go through that kind of stuff anymore. He'll sort of have gotten it, and he'll be able to, you know, sort of roll with the punches probably a lot better.
Being through the ringer, that's right. This is a fun one. This is from Paul at PhD199. Oh, sorry, not that one, no. Where it is. Actually, this is Bryce Edie again.
PhD199.
Sorry, Paul. Oh, Paul, we
you
teased him.
His question now.
All right.
We teased it. Now
we teased him.
There's
another good question, but it was from the same guy,
okay,
Bryce Edie.
We'll do Paul.
We're going to do Paul. All right, Paul, it's your lucky day, buddy.
I wasn't prepared for this question.
It was, okay, Paul says, I can't figure the problem. It's not even a question. I can't figure the problem with the Leafs' defensive collapse in late stages of a game. ..
It's an experience, in my opinion. It's an experience. And I mean, they make great things happen at both ends of the ice. That's what makes the Leafs so special. And I mean, the outdoor game was the perfect example. They have that great lead, and then it's like, Keystone Kops, for God's sakes, on the final play. And you know what? Babcock talked about it after. And this, I believe this is all part of the process. Babcock said after, yeah, I could have had Leo Komarov and Nazem Kadri out there in the last minute, but you know what? That's not going to help Zach Hyman. That's not going to help Connor Brown. That's not going to help Austin Matthews. That's not going to help you know, the defense that's back there. And, I mean, I think they're willing to live with those collapses because they know that those are going to be learning experiences for these guys. And lots of times they play themselves out of those collapses,
right,
like they did Saturday night.
Yeah, exactly.
Like they did in the outdoor game. And I wouldn't be too concerned about those things. I mean, it's their defense isn't great. They need to they need a better blue line. They've got to bolster that. That's got to be an area of the roster where they get better. And I wouldn't be too concerned about this at this point if I were a Leaf fan, which I'm not. None of us are. So don't accuse us of that.
One guy did already today.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would also say that the experienced guys they have tend to cough the puck up a lot. Roman Polak and Matt Hunwick. And when you get into those late situation games, and you can see it when you're at Toronto games, they don't quite get the puck out of the zone and the team never gets it back, and inevitably those are the clearing attempts that
and then it goes and then you're looking at it and you go, yeah, this isn't going to end well.
Exactly. Here comes it happens.
Yeah,
they're playing
friggin' Harlem Globetrotters.
And in the long term, I mean, those guys are not going to be part of the Maple Leafs when this team is ready to actually contend.
Right.
So I think the combination of the inexperienced guys learning and the experienced guys not being there anymore is going to kind of solve itself as long as they get the proper replacements.
Yeah, 100%. Because, and like you said, Ken, they pull out as many as they give away in terms of late game collapses.
Yeah.
It's they're entertainment incarnate. That's what I'm calling them all year long. They're just Michael Bay movie. Expensive. Everyone pays. He's the director. He directed Transformers.
Con Air,
Armageddon. His movies are all big and loud.
I've
lots
never
of
seen one of those movies.
Millions
of
people.
What the hell
they make so much money, no matter how crappy they are.
Really?
Like the Leafs.
Yeah.
They're super exciting.
Like the Leafs.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Whatever.
One more question. This one's from Max Horowitz at the Moose 0221. Sounds like the last four digits of his phone number, ladies. likelihood Florida can sneak into the wild card or possibly the Atlantic with a finally full roster because we have Sasha Barkov and Jonathan Huberdeau back.
Yeah. They should. They're what, two out for the division and two out for the wild card, three out for the division. They got games in hand on Boston. I mean, this is a team that's not very different from the one that got 104 points last year, except for the fact that they stupidly fired their coach and made a panic move
and changed
put
the,
a guy
changed
behind
the blue
bench
line
that's never coached in the NHL before. but other than that, aside from that, they're pretty well the same team. Yeah, I. It's interesting though. Like, there's some teams in the East that are really coming on that are in that same spot. Like the Islanders, would scare me a little bit.
Mm.
Carolina scares me a little bit. Detroit doesn't scare me. I don't think they're
done.
Do it. Well, they're at 53, right?
Yeah,
so they're only 3 or 4 points out themselves, but I don't know. I think what we're going to find out, ask me that question in about 2 weeks, because Florida's going on a run here where they got LA at home, then they're on the road in Nashville, San Jose, Anaheim, LA, and St. Louis.
Wow.
Okay? So right now they're on reading week, I think. So they you know, maybe it's going to be 3 weeks from now because they're sunning their asses on some beach and wherever.
At home.
At home. Anyways, but I think we're going to know a lot better after that little run of games.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my concern would be that they're in the Atlantic. We're most likely only going to see 3 Atlantic teams in the playoffs.
Right.
And the Leafs are ahead of them in terms of actual points and games in hand. And then you still have the Bruins, who are probably going to tail off because they play more games than anybody in that division.
I think the Bruins are actually finished.
The Bruins are on reading.
I think they're finished. Like, I think they played 82 games. Their season.
Their schedule is
complete.
Yeah.
Zdeno Chara retired. There was a banner. it was lovely. They flew. Flew his family in. The Ottawa Senators, they've only played 50 games. I feel like Ottawa's already locked up home ice advantage in that division.
Which is crazy. Yeah.
You can't figure out why they're winning, but they are, and they're going to be in the playoffs. So we'll see what happens from there. But that would be my concern with Florida, is that they're going to run out of tarmac.
Right.
Because there's a couple of teams ahead of them, and they're going to have, you get into those, those 3-point games where it's just so hard to leap teams when you're behind. And so that would be my main concern.
Well, they only got one team to go over right now. And like, that's what I'm concerned about with those other teams, is not so much the number of points. It's the number of teams you have to hop over.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
I think that's always a big obstacle, especially in the 3-point games. And like it was like, wow, now it's like, somebody said, oh, the Leafs beat Boston 6-5 in regulation.
Yeah.
It was like, that was such a big deal.
Yeah.
And to me, the other thing to think about is, it's not like Barkov and Huberto are guaranteed to just hit the ground running. They might have some rust, especially Huberto, long layoff.
Sure. He scored in his first game back, didn't he?
I don't know.
I think he scored a goal.
He might have, but I still think...
Sorry, I didn't mean to make you look stupid.
Yeah, just pull that the rock. So I'm going to stubbornly stick to my point. Huberto's going to go on a goalless streak for a while.
Lots of guys do that. They come back in their first game, they're really good, and then after that, they don't play good because they're not so good, because they're kind of rusty.
It's the adrenaline.
So, so that's why.
I'm calling it Jonathan Huberto slump.
Okay, good.
Right.
Yeah, okay. They don't play good. He didn't play good because he wasn't playing good.
Enough speaking, Kenneth. We're getting near the end of the podcast. It's time for the greatest game ever invented.
Already at the end?
Yeah. We're already at the end.
The funnest part of my week is almost over already.
Well, end it on a high note, or low note if you lose. Was he a Ranger? It's time.
All right.
So who's going first here?
I'll go. All right, you want to go? No, you go.
Okay.
I'll go. No, you go.
Shut up. Okay. Mark Savard. Was he a Ranger?
I believe he was a Ranger.
He was a Ranger. Was he involved in a Bobby Hallique trade or something? I don't know.
I think he was a Ranger.
Yep. I think he got traded from Calgary to the Rangers. I'm going to say Ranger.
He was a Ranger.
Oh,
so well done. But ironically, traded from the Rangers to Calgary.
Oh.
Drafted by the Rangers.
Yeah, he's originally a Ranger, right?
Originally a Ranger.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay, my guy, 1980 Olympic hero, Neil Broughton.
Ooh.
Hmm. Okay, we're going to think nothing but Minnesota. He's Mr. Minnesota.
Yeah.
I think because of that association, he's also a New Jersey Devil. Wait, that could be the trick. He went to New Jersey.
But he played for a bunch of teams at the end, guys. Played for
He's overselling it. Not a Ranger.
I'm going to say not a Ranger because I think another factor is he's trying to make us think of like Aaron or Paul Broughton, who also, two of them could have also played for the Rangers at some point. I'm going to say not a Ranger.
Shit. Good work, guys.
Yeah.
That was good. I couldn't, wow.
Yeah.
See, you can't do that. You can't think.
How dare you use your brain to answer a question? You're supposed to just numbly spit out, yes, no, Benja.
Yeah. Okay, so this is for the win, Matt.
For the win. Last one, Rich Pilon.
Rich Pilon. Definitely an Islander.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to say it was not a Ranger. Yeah. I can't picture him as a Ranger. But shit, maybe.
Oh. I'm gonna say was he a Ranger because I'm looking at Matt and he's like,
maybe it's a trick.
The
smile could be a trick.
I'm gonna say was he a Ranger.
I'm gonna say
now Matt
say was he a Ranger. You're asking the question.
Was a Ranger. Yeah.
I'll go with he wasn't a Ranger.
Oh, doesn't count for Ken. He already answered. But the answer is yes, he was a Ranger for one season at the end of his career. Yeah.
Fantastic.
Nice. It's funny. Nice. Quick true story. We had Ryan McDonough of the Rangers at the All-Star game. We told him about was he a Ranger last week. He agreed to play. We told him to think of a Ranger overnight. But then after the All-Star game, there were so many tables and TV cameras, we just couldn't get to him.
So we couldn't play. Yeah, it was a big shit show.
So as far as he's concerned, we stood him up. So Ryan, if you're listening, which you aren't, we're sorry. And
that would have been fun because I think he would have been game. He was pretty cool.
He said he was going to think of it.
Yeah, he thought it was kind of a neat thing, and it would have been kind of fun. I still want to do it with a guy that's a Ranger. I still want to do this someday with a guy who's a Ranger.
I can leave that one. Just let people listen to what Ken just said. And thanks for listening. We'll be back next week.